Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hey, Tommy, we have owned and especially driven almost every new car in the last 15 years. So I thought today would be fun to talk about the ones that we figured out are most overhyped and the ones that are the most underappreciated. You good with that?
Well, listen, we have been very fortunate to drive some amazing cars, but I still haven't seen a Chiron in the driveway.
Yeah, of course.
A Koenigsegg, a Pagani. So we're missing some of maybe the hypercars, but in terms of like...
That's not our audience, is it?
In terms of cars that regular people have heard of, we've been very fortunate to have driven most of them. So we're going to talk about the most overhyped as well as the underappreciated cars that that we see across the internet that we've had some time to live with and experience.
Yeah, so let's start with the most overhyped car right now, and that's the Porsche 911. There has been so much written, so much said, so much arm twisting, hand wringing, eyebrow lifting about the new 911, especially since it's gone hybrid. And I'm not sure that the 911 deserves all that praise and all that discussion. I mean, it's a good car, but it's way overhyped at this point.
Well, I think it's a mechanical masterpiece is what I would call it. But it's the same problem I have with the C8 Corvettes, which we'll talk about in a second, where they have made it so good, they have kind of engineered some of the character out of the 911. And what I mean by that is it is so mechanically dialed in that in order to exploit the performance of the car, you have to be going so fast and you're going right to jail speeds that at normal everyday speeds, it just doesn't feel that fun or special. So we own this car in the video, right?
Yeah.
This is a 2024 Porsche 911 Targa 4S that we bought. And it was a lot of money. It was like $150,000. So we promptly sold it to get the money back out of it because we can't have that much money tied up in one car in the company as much as... I'm not even going to say that. I didn't love the car all that much. And my problem with the car was if you were on an airstrip like we were in this video and you had it in the right mode, in the right setting, and you were really brutal on that throttle, it felt very fast and fun and special. But cruising around, if you were under like 4,000 RPM, it just felt kind of like you were always dragging an anchor. Like it didn't really feel all that fast until you were fully pushing it, and then it would rip your face off. So as an everyday fun car, I think there's much better options.
Yeah, but you can say that about a lot of cars, especially today's high horsepower cars.
I agree,
right?
Yeah, I agree.
So I don't think that's necessarily specific to the 911. There's a long list of cars that have that very same issue where it doesn't really come into its own until you get, you know, double digit numbers beyond the speed limit or triple digit numbers. I think the reason it's so overhyped is because it's kind of like, you know, Rolex right now, where it's hard to get, especially if you want the ones that everybody wants, which are, of course, is the ST, the GT3, the GT3 RS, right? And I think that gives it a kind of a certain sense of like unattainium. And I think that makes it that much more desirable. So yeah. Porsche has managed to walk that fine line between, you know, building one car less than demand, which I compliment them for. And then that creates this kind of lust in people for something that they can't have. And I just think that the car itself is wonderful. I really enjoyed the one we have. But like I said, all the stuff written said about it is too much, just too much, you know? Porsche has sliced that segment as well. I think there's like 28 different 911s right now that you can order, everything from you know, the base one to the new Carrera T to, you know, the GT3 to the GT3 RS to the ST to the Heritage Edition. And I'm just naming off a few of them. And when you have that many different slices of Porsche pie, it kind of becomes not so special.
Yeah, I think that what you said is 100% true. It is definitely the darling of the internet and of the wealthy podcasters right now, and it has become a status symbol. The problem is it's become a status symbol more to get an allocation for the car than the car itself. And I've talked to a lot of people about this, where they're like, can you believe I got an allocation for the next GT3? And like, they're more excited by the fact that they're allowed to buy one than the actual car that's going to be delivered. And when that happens, I think there's a little bit of a problem. It very much is like a status symbol. So I think we're on the same page. The 911 is an overrated car currently in 2025. But let's go the other way. Let's talk about an underappreciated car.
Yeah, and that's the car that we bought with the money we used. That's the money we used to buy. God, I'm just having a hard day today, Tommy. We used the money from the 911 to buy this car, and that is, of course, the BMW i8. Now, BMW built only about 20,000 of these. 17,000 were the coupes, and 3,000-ish were the convertibles. And at the time when the car came out, it was kind of BMW's moonshot. So why don't you tell them about the technical details, and then we'll talk about why it didn't really take off.
Well, BMW acquired this facility that specialized in carbon fiber, and they had big plans to launch a line of BMW i cars. And realistically, there were two products that came out of those plans, the BMW i3 and the BMW i8. Now, both are very technically advanced cars that really move the needle as to what a car can do, in my opinion. The i3 was a revolution in urban transport, and the i8 kind of prove that you could take a very small engine, combine it with a hybrid system, and obtain much higher than anticipated performance.
Yeah, but I asked you to talk about the technical specs, and you kind of buried the lead there. The fact is, the thing has not one, not two, but three electric motors.
Yeah, so it's got a two-speed transmission for the front axle. So the front axle is driven by an electric e-machine, as BMW would call it. On the rear axle, we've got more motors and a three-cylinder turbocharged engine from the Mini Cooper. And I think it's a six-speed automatic, torque converter six-speed. And then they work together to produce 357 horsepower. And this was a problem with the i8 that everybody criticized it for, is it had supercar or, you know, I think it's got concept car looks and proportions. It is a stunning car. But then people saw three-cylinder and 357 horsepower for $140,000, and things didn't add up. But the thing about the i8 is that the real-world performance far exceeds your anticipation of that car. So we just did a drag race with a C8 Corvette, which is 495 horsepower, dual clutch.
And using launch control in both cars, the
yep.
C8 lost.
Yeah, by a big margin.
By a big margin, which is surprising because the C8 supposedly has, what, just 500 horsepower.
And they say 0 to 60 on the C8 in 2.9
okay, 495, seconds. I know.
So here's the thing, right? Real world, in Colorado at elevation, C8's down on power, no forced induction, no electric motor. The BMW has both. But the crazy part is we ran the quarter mile in the C8 at 1257. And we ran the quarter mile in the i8 at 1260. So 0.03 difference between the two. 0 to 60 was identical, 4.2 seconds. Now that i8 was supposed to do those numbers brand new 11 years ago at sea level, and it was putting down those times on a rough surface at a mile above sea level with 30, 40,000 miles on it. I mean, it was amazing what that can do in the real world.
Yeah, and I think problem with it was that three-cylinder Mini engine, right?
Exactly.
So it kind of had the whiff of economy car.
Sure, and it launched at the same time as the Porsche 918, the Ferrari LaFerrari, and the McLaren P1, the Holy Trinity. Right. And that was the same group of cars that also used hybridization. So I think people were expecting the i8 to more or less play in that same field. Now, of course, those were million-dollar cars. This was a $130,000 car, but it didn't have anywhere near that performance. Now, I strongly believe this, that if BMW had engineered that design, that architecture around a V8 with a manual, it would be today a $200,000 car, $250,000, and right now they're between $40,000 and $50,000 in the used market. So I think that was a miss, from a marketing standpoint, but from an actual drivability standpoint.
You couldn't do it in a manual. You couldn't have three electric motors in
a manual. But if they had done none of that.
Oh, you're saying, like put a ruddy big, like.
So take the
take the design and put like a ruddy big 10 cylinder or something.
Yeah, take the M5 engine with the manual, stick it behind you, and that would have been an instant classic. I think the hybrid thing really confused people, and it was a little too far advanced, and the three cylinder didn't market well. So those were the issues with the i8. And then, of course, you know, journalists said it was too soft, right? Didn't handle as well as like a 911.
It's definitely a GT.
Yeah, but it is an excellent machine for the price now that you can pick them up for, which is $40,000 to $50,000, in some cases even less than $40,000.
Depending, they built them from 2014 to 2020, so the newer they get, the more expensive they become. And then the last couple of years of production were mainly the convertibles, and those are even more expensive, but then you lose the rear seats, which is a shame because I like the rear seats because there isn't a lot of trunk space. Now, Tom, you're also missing the fact that it was a plug-in hybrid, so you can get up to, in the later models, I think it was like 30 miles of all-electric range.
Sure.
And then you had this incredibly technologically advanced system where, you know, you had the electric motor in the rear that would fill in for the shifts on the six-speed. You had this two-speed transmission in the front. When the car is in all-electric mode, it's front-wheel drive. You know, and when you step on it, it becomes all-wheel drive. And then the materials used, of course, are pretty exemplary, right? The car's not all that heavy, even though it is basically, you know, has, what, 1, 2, 3 electric motors and a gas engine. You'd think that'd be, you know, by today's standard, a heavy pig, and it's not. I think it's like 3,600 pounds, something like that.
I think it's less than that. Yeah, it's not that heavy.
And I was just so impressed by the car. I picked it up in Alaska and drove it down the Alcan, which is not exactly a highway built for, for supercars. And yet it took everything we threw at it, including, you know, long distances between gas stops where we'd have to go 200 miles between a gas station. And that car only has a 10-gallon fuel tank. Mm-hmm. And it's getting, if you plug it in, around 60 to 70 mpg. So, I mean, it's pretty phenomenal at everything it does. It just, you know, has the problem that everybody associates supercars with big honking engines. And I disagree. There are plenty of cars with, like, you know, twin turbo V8s now with the Revuelto. You've got a twin turbo 12-cylinder. No, it's a naturally aspirated 12, right? In the Revuelto, it's the Timur, what's the smaller one that has a twin turbo 8?
Timurario.
Yeah, Timurario. Look at that. I mean, look how gorgeous that car looks on the road there. It's just a beautiful car.
Yeah, so they did a really good job engineering it. And I think at the price it was new, it was too expensive. And the interesting thing is, like, now that they're used, we got a lot of data on reliability. And there are very, very few things that go wrong with i8s, which I think is very interesting. You know, there was some... We can get into it in a different podcast. But the batteries are holding up really well. Powertrains are holding up really well.
There's some small things that
like
go wrong.
Like the air conditioning compressor can, the impeller can explode, sending shrapnel through the cooling system.
Which is bad.
Because the battery is cooled based on the AC loop for the motor. But apart from that, which is very, very rare and very, very unlikely, the cars are doing really, really well. So a car I want to talk about that we kind of alluded to that I think is both under and overrated is the C8 Corvette.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's overrated because everybody, you know, has a cliche of what a Corvette is, right? An old guy with a beer belly and very few hairs left on his head is who drives it. It's, you know, the classic American, inexpensive but cheaply made, poorly fitted out fiberglass sports car. But none of what I just said is true about the new C8.
Well, the old men driving it is very
all right.
True.
Well, I'll give you that. Yeah, all right. That's
so I
true.
See that a lot.
All right, but how about the poorly made and badly fitted out, made of fiberglass? First of all, it hasn't been made of fiberglass since like when?
Well, it's a composite. I think it's called SMC.
Right, but like 63 or something was the last.
It's been a long time since they've used pure fiberglass.
Yeah.
No, it's an amazingly engineered car that does so much well. And for the first time, I think C7, you can make this argument as well, but it has a really good interior. Feels very well put together. It's very refined on the road, and still it'll go fast. The base C8 with just a Z51 package, not a Z06 or Z01, beats R8 V10s, Lexus LFA. It beats Aventadors all around the Nürburgring. I mean, it's an insane performance vehicle for the price. I think that at elevation in the real world, like we've proved on that drag race we talked about, we got nowhere near the claim 0-60 number. You have to be on such a prepped surface at sea level on the right day with the 48-pound driver and no gas in it to get those numbers. But apart from that, like, the handling is incredible. The performance is incredible. It really is an amazing automobile.
Yeah, just like Porsche, you can get your Corvette in any configuration that you like. And, of course, we don't have 28 models of the Corvette now, but we do have the base Corvette, the E-Ray, the Z06, the ZR1 that's coming, and the Zora. And so there are, you know, different flavors of Corvette for whatever you want to do with it.
Yeah, no, I think that it's a very impressive machine. I don't love the looks of it still. I think that Tom Peters, who designed this car, is an incredible designer. He kind of overstyled it a little. I mean, it's there's a lot going on with this design. There's a lot of angles, and I just think it could have been simplified a little bit to be more beautiful.
I think our Torch Red, though, does a good job in
hiding the points.
I was going to say coalescing the design language so it doesn't look so busy.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Yeah, it's a little busy though, regardless. And then I still think like a manual transmission is so much of the personality of a Corvette that was such a unique buying factor, and this doesn't have any of it available. So I think that is a bit of a shame, and it doesn't sound as good as the C7 it replaced. It's a little bit tamer.
All right, I'm going to give you two cars now. One is overhyped and one is underappreciated from the same brand.
Okay.
All right, so the first one that's overhyped is one of those cars, and see if you can guess this, right?
Yeah.
That basically was extremely popular when it came out. It was very expensive. It was from a brand that didn't have a legacy of building sports cars. In fact, they hadn't built very many sports cars until that moment. And yet, it didn't sell.
Can you tell me?
It was a moonshot by the biggest car maker in the world.
Can you tell me?
Lexus.
The LFA?
Yes, finally.
Yeah, listen. I think that the hype around the LFA is pretty nuts. And I have a hard time believing it is that good, especially with a single clutch automated manual. But I've never driven an LFA. I've never interacted with one. So I need to reserve judgment until I'm able to do so.
So I never drove one, but I did sit in one, and I did take it around a racetrack as a passenger. So I guess I am more qualified than you, even though a lot of people might say I'm not qualified enough to comment on it. So the engine note is fantastic. The build quality is fantastic. The design is fantastic. But because of that one giant flaw, the single, what is it, single clutch
automated manual.
Just makes it a bear to drive.
Yeah.
Just a bear, especially in stop-and-go traffic. You can have the world's nicest car, but if you've got a transmission that just does not want to play ball, it makes it, you know, a very unappealing car. And, of course, because it didn't sell a lot, I think they sold 400 of them, right?
It's quite a bit more than that, wasn't it?
I don't know if it was more than that. Maybe it was more than 400?
Let's see.
What's LFA production once you Google it? But they didn't sell a lot of them, and they sat in the showrooms, and they lingered. That created that perfect environment, that perfect storm for a car that now is worth over $1 million if you have the right one.
500. So you're pretty close.
I was off 500. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, these were what, 350? 350,000?
Yeah, but
new.
This was a while ago. But 350 was a serious number.
Yeah, but it wasn't 40 years ago. It was 2010.
It was a serious number, at least
it
in
is.
My mind.
Yeah, but
for a Lexus, for a car company that never had built a supercar.
But now they're $1 million.
Yes.
And that's an even more serious number than I think. 350.
Yeah, I have to take this. Sorry.
Yeah, I'll keep going.
Okay,
I've got some other ones.
Okay, LC.
Lexus LC. My dad is getting an important phone call here. And I suppose we could edit it, but we have decided not to edit it. So I'm just going to keep vibing here. So the Lexus LC, for those that are you know, not in the know, is the current sports coupe and convertible by Lexus. And it is an excellent machine. It is one of the most beautiful cars on the market. It is one of the, I think, best made cars on the market, a wonderful interior. It's not a super high performance machine relative to the design. It's got a little bit of that I8 problem, except it does have a naturally aspirated 5-liter V8, which sounds glorious, but it's not a straight line burner. But as an overall package, it is a fantastic car that not a lot of people buy. Now, it is a tough class to sell vehicles in, this like luxury tour convertible category with like the Mercedes SL. You know, it's a tough category, but it is an amazing car. Buddy James has one, and you know, it's amazing. The other car I want to talk about that is, you know, similar to the LC500 is the hybrid version is even more interesting to me in some ways. It's got a really interesting hybrid system.
Oh my God, that thing is...
It's cool. I actually like the hybrid.
A hybrid as opposed to a 4-liter V8, really?
I like the driving experience... 5-liter V8. So, I like the driving experience...
Sorry, 5-liter V8. So the hybrid is the one to get because they've sold like 12 of them.
Yeah, and it's a really interesting transmission. It uses like a combination of a 4-speed and a planetary gear set, so it emulates a 10-speed. And they have a simulated sound on the inside, which is very well done. And it genuinely sounds like a F1 car on the inside when you're shifting it. It's like, I mean, it's a really cool sound. It's a cool experience that very few people actually buy because obviously the V8 seems like the better way to go. But I'd be tempted on the used market. The V8's not that quick to begin with anyways. Yes, it sounds amazing, but the hybrid, kind of a hidden gem.
Yeah, I'll let you go with that, Tommy. You be you. I just think that if you're going to get that car, definitely get the 5-liter V8 because it sounds magnificent, and we're going to see a lot more hybrids in the near future, and V8s are slowly but surely dying out. I know a lot of people think they might be coming back. I wouldn't hold my breath, especially not in big quantities. So I think that car is one of the most gorgeous, one of the most beautiful, one of the most sexy cars out there. And yet, ironically, it's not selling in big numbers.
No, because I talked about that a little bit when you were gone.
Yeah, sorry about that.
This category of car, apart from 911, doesn't sell very well. This is like Mercedes SL, right?
Yeah.
It's a pretty low volume segment, but the car is amazing and they really hold their value. Like I was hoping now that the car, I think, is going on first model year is 2020, maybe 2019. It's going from 5-6 years old. You might be able to pick one for 15 grand and a raspberry, but they're still like $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 for a good one. So typical Lexus product, they hold their value like crazy. Now, I do want to say, same vein as this, maybe not overrated because not a lot of people talk about, but it's a car that I was disappointed by is the Lexus RCF. It's a car that's being discontinued. RCF is kind of the LC's little brother. A little bit more sporty, and they have some track additions, which I just found to be terrible. But this is a car.
They have a torque vectoring rear end differential, Tommy.
Yeah, it's just this car doesn't do anything for me. It does not. It's not that quick for what it is. It's too expensive, and especially the last track edition I drove was just miserable. So, granted, I wasn't on a track, but I couldn't just. It wasn't miserable enough to feel only like a track toy, and it definitely wasn't soft enough to be an everyday driver. So it wasn't for me.
Okay. I'll give you another. Since we're sticking with Toyota, I'll give you another one.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Underappreciated Toyota would be...
Easy. No, easy.
No, I've got one. This is a really crazy one. The Venza.
That's not underappreciated.
It is underappreciated. It's actually a really fun little car. It was only here for about...
Fun? Okay.
It was only here for 2 years.
I'm going to give you an opportunity.
My best friend Steve bought one. And I think if you're at a certain age and a certain type of buyer, this is a car that will exceptionally fill your lifestyle. And if you've got a little bit more money than, you know, having to go out and buy a Subaru, get yourself a Venza because it's going to be much more unique. Much more reliable.
Unique.
And much more, I'll say it, fun to drive.
It's not fun to drive.
Yeah, okay.
There's nothing fun about a Venza.
All right, what was yours?
The Venza is an excellent machine.
Yes.
If your sole purpose is you want a quiet, comfortable bubble to get you to...
That's what a lot of people want.
To and from the bingo hall, I think the Venza works very well.
I like the front
well.
End. It kind of looks very...
generic.
No. I would say whale-like.
This is the Kroger brand of crossover SUVs.
It looks like a giant sperm whale from the front.
That's what I think of when I think of an attractive animal, a sperm whale. Look, the Venza, they tried it in the first gen. It didn't work. So they tried it in the second gen. It didn't work again.
It kind of worked, and then it was replaced by the Crown and the Crown Signia.
Yeah, this is not it. It's a good car. You'd be very happy owning it, especially you in your advanced stage. But it is not.
You know what else? If you can't afford a Lexus RX, get a Venza.
Or get a slightly used RX.
No, get a Venza, because you're going to pretty much get everything you get in the RX in terms of reliability.
In terms of
creature comfort. You won't get the Lexus logo, but you will get about everything else.
This is like Toyota, Akio announced a while back.
Yeah.
No more boring Toyotas, right?
It's not boring.
And he's done a great job of upholding that, except for this. This thing was incredibly boring.
Right, well, we disagree. All right, what's yours?
My underrated and overrated vehicle.
Okay, GR.
The Toyota 4Runner.
I say GR.
So here's my argument for the 4Runner. Fifth generation 4Runners are they are the car that can do no wrong on the internet.
Yeah.
Everybody loves a fifth generation 4Runner, and they serve their purpose in my mind. They are very, very good vehicles. Don't get me wrong. They last an extremely long time.
So for all of you who don't know what the fifth generation is, let me define that. That's the current one. Not the new one. The new one is the sixth generation.
Well, it's old now. So 2010 through 2024.
Yes. I say current because people, you know, the new ones are just hitting the dealerships now.
2010 through 2024.
Yeah.
And listen, they work exceptionally well at lasting a long time, but they're also pretty flawed as a daily driver, especially in 2025. That V6 with the 5-speed combo sounds and moves like a cow, especially at a mile above sea level, especially if you put any kinds of lifts on them.
I agree that the engine and the transmission,
they're workhorses, but they've never really gotten my blood going.
I mean, 5-speed is so old now, so old.
So that is my overrated car. And there's a big aftermarket community, and I understand why they're popular, and they are excellent, but they're just not, they just don't do it for me. But the new one, which everybody hates because it's too expensive, according to people, and it's gone to Turbo 4, is actually excellent. It is so good. They've done such a good job with the new 4Runner.
I think the ride's a little rough,
and the engine sounds like a blender. But it's too expensive. I still think that. But from a drivability standpoint,
you think it's overhyped or underappreciated, the new one?
It's underappreciated. So the old one was overhyped.
All right, so we've done a lot of videos with the new one because we bought one.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody in there, of course, in the comment section is like, it's too expensive.
Which I think it is. I think it's probably $5,000 to $10,000 too expensive.
It's you know, it doesn't have the same V6.
That's true.
That's, I think, just a knee-jerk reaction. Somebody said this on a podcast. If you look back at every generation of 4Runner when they come out, everybody's like, oh, this is horrible, I hate it. And then, you know, within 2 years, it becomes iconic.
Yeah, because when the fourth gen came out, everyone was like, oh my God, they lost the 3.4. This is the end of the world. And then when the fifth gen came out, they said, it's too big and there's no more V8. I'm not buying that. And then it became the favorite. And now the sixth gen came out and it's the same kind of criticisms. But genuinely, if you give that 2.4 liter engine a shot, it's look, I know it's quote-unquote unproven, but it is proven. It's been proven in the Highlander for a couple of years. It's been proven in the NX for like 4 years.
Venza?
No, Venza? Not the Venza. Stop bringing up the Venza. Nobody wants the Venza.
Aquatic. That's the design language. It's very aquatic.
Aquatic?
No,
what does that mean? Aquatic?
Aquatic, sorry. Aquatic.
Is that a word, Cole?
Aquatic. It's very aquatic. Yeah, having to do with the ocean.
It's very fish-like is what you're saying.
It's very aquatic.
It's like a clam.
Aquatic.
Yeah, I agree. It does look like a clam.
Oh.
I just don't like the Venza. I'm sorry. I can't get around to it. But the 4Runner, the new one, it's very good.
Looks like a happy-go-lucky whale. What's wrong with a happy-go-lucky whale?
There's nothing wrong with it. It's just not an attractive design.
All right. I'm going to go with my... This Toyota is both under and over appreciated. It's the GR Corolla.
Well, it can't be both.
How can it be both? Because when you walk up to it, you're like, holy cow, we got an affordable 300 horsepower, 3-cylinder, hot hatch that lets you send torque to the front wheels or to the rear wheels or however you want, all-wheel drive. You know, this is the rally car that people can afford. Kind of harkens back to the glory days of the STI and the Evos. And then you get in the thing and you're like, man, this thing is plasticky and it rides harshly. And it doesn't go as quickly as it looks. And so that's what I mean by it's underappreciated and overhyped.
Look, at the base price, they can't sell a Maybach interior for $36,000, right? So that's kind of understandable.
Slip test on it.
So at $50,000, I think you're right. Maybe it is a little bit too expensive, but at the base price, I think the interior is fine. I disagree totally with the ride quality. I think it's a very good handling car. I do agree with you that it could probably use like 50 more horsepower, but then what car in 2025 can't use 50 more horsepower? I mean, everything has gotten so powerful. Like the horsepower races are crazy. Look, it still is a manual transmission, all-wheel drive.
Yeah, I applaud it for
turbocharged hot hatch.
I'm happy that they brought back the hot hatch. So maybe here's the problem, Tommy. Maybe it's me. Maybe I grew up during an era when hot hatches were cool. Remember you were around for the RS, right? The
Focus
RS, right? This was the heyday of the hot hatch, and this brings back that moment in time. But maybe I've forgotten all of the blemishes and all the wrinkles in those cars, because even the Evo, right? If you pick an Evo from Fast and Furious and you get behind the wheel and you're like, this thing drives really quickly, and yet the interior is about as cheap and about as base as the least expensive rental car you can get.
So
left you speechless, my man.
So but what's your point there?
Nothing. I just find that it's very overhyped. And in some ways, it's underappreciated because it's the last of a breed.
So if you had to pick one, because they're kind of in contrast with each other, is it overhyped or is it underappreciated?
I'm going to go with overhyped.
Going with overhyped, yeah. Huh? Right. Interesting. Right. Okay, right. Interesting.
You got some more?
Yeah, I do. I think a car that is underappreciated, we're sticking with the Toyota world here.
Okay.
The Supra, current Supra.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, everybody discounted it because of the Toyota connection, the BMW connection. But as a vehicle to drive with a manual transmission, it is truly spectacular.
Yeah, I was talking to my man James, who of course has the fifth generation 4Runner, has the Lexus.
He's got a 1995 Supra as well, so he's got the last
Supra. Yeah, and I said, why don't you get the new Supra? And he said he just couldn't do it because of the straight six from BMW. And I thought to myself, James, the straight six from BMW is one of the best powertrains ever produced in a sporty car. And yet, because of the fact that it's got this German engine, he just can't get past the fact that there is not a pure Toyota powertrain in the thing.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yep.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
But it's, and Toyota went through the same reliability testing with this engine that they do with everything. Mm. That B58's been around for years. People love them. They're genuinely reliable. And then when they finally stuck the manual in it, then that car just became magic. It was so good. So I think that's a really highly underappreciated car. And I think it kind of went through a phase, started out underappreciated. Then everybody bought one and it blew up and it was like, wow, this thing's the best thing in the world. And now that the craze has calmed down and people are over it, I think it's back to being kind of underappreciated. But it is an amazing machine to drive. It's a little tight on the inside. The wind buffeting problem has been talked about. It's kind of annoying. But as a stock, out-of-the-box performance machine with the manual transmission, it's excellent.
I'll give you another. Let's jump another brand. I'll give you two from the same brand.
Mm-hmm.
You want underappreciated or overhyped?
Do underappreciated.
The underappreciated car from Audi, I think, is the Audi TT RS. The last generation, before it ceased to exist, I drove both on the track and on the road, and I was just smitten with the car. It's light, it's lively, it steers well, it had that five-cylinder turbo, which sounded like a pissed-off V8. Just a really fun car that did it all, but for some reason, I think once the TT shine went off the Apple, it somehow lost the spirit of what made it so great in that first generation.
But why not? The problem with this car is always...
And maybe it wasn't all that great in the first generation, right? I mean, it was always a GTI or a Golf R with the underpinnings of those cars and then, the Audi cream on top.
The problem is, why not just get the RS3?
I would agree, both. That one's also underappreciated.
I think RS3 is pretty... It's pretty well loved. RS3
I just drove the new S3. I can't talk about how it drove yet, but I did like it. I had it in Python yellow, Tommy, Python yellow. And the reason I say that's also underappreciated is we put out the walk-around video and no one cared. Well, it's the S3, not the R3.
I think that's our audience. Because I think it's other people's audiences that are more German-focused. The car does pretty well for them. I just think that I like the TTRS. It was a great design. It was a good performing vehicle. But for less money, you could get more seats, more doors, and the same engine. So I think it's cool. I'm just not sure I'm on the same boat with that.
Now, the overhyped one, I think, is the RS6 Avant, the station wagon.
Overhyped, okay.
Yeah, and I think it's overhyped because it's just such a gorgeous car. I mean, those giant exhausts, those ovals at the back, you know, that beautiful front end, that long, elongated body, which is, you know, typical of a wagon, especially when you lower it. It just looks so sexy. The problem is once you get behind the wheel, the thing is extremely thirsty. It's not slow. It's over 600 horsepower, but the M5 Touring, which is coming, is over 700 horsepower now. So you've got basically a car that costs more than the new M5 Touring and yet is extremely heavy and thirsty. And when you drive it, you just feel kind of the weight of the thing. It doesn't feel like it wants to go around a corner quickly. It just feels like a German muscle car, which is fine, but the car seems like more canyon carvy than straight line speed.
Listen, it doesn't look like a beaver, like the BMW.
And it's, well, talk about this car, not the BMW.
And it's heavy, but it doesn't weigh more than a collapsed sun. like BMW, if they had just made that M5 Touring not look so weird, and if they had just ditched the hybrid system, it would have been such a more loved car, right? And maybe they couldn't because of the European emission standards and whatever. But I just think that they missed the boat on that M5 Touring. The Touring is better than the sedan because finally we get a wagon in the U.S., but I don't know, Dad. I'm not sold on that M5.
All right, I'm going to give you another underappreciated car, this time from Ford. And this is certainly one that has been hyped and has sold very well. And yet I still think it's underappreciated by the people who should be buying it.
Okay, what you got?
It's the new Ford Maverick. I think it's, you know, it sells very well, but it sells to a lot of fleets. You see a lot of them zipping around, you know, with like parts cars for local parts stores. But just as a vehicle that does it all, especially the new hybrid all-wheel drive, which we bought, and for the cost of entry, which is, you know, under $30,000, I think it's just one hell of a car. One hell of a truck. The reason it's unappreciated is because typical truck buyers kind of look down their nose at it. They think it's too small. They think it's more of a car than a truck. And yet, it has 1,400 pounds of payload, and it does pretty much everything, you know, a small truck should do, and it's extremely comfortable. And for how small it is in truck world, it's actually very roomy, especially in the front seats.
Yeah.
So that's my argument for why it's underappreciated.
Yeah, I think that it's...
Mary got 45 mpg with it.
That's amazing. But listen, I think it's hard to say it's underappreciated when there's like a six-month waiting list for these things.
I'm not sure there's a six-month waiting list anymore. I think there was initially.
There was, and they're still, in some cases, going over sticker. So I think that it's very adequately appreciated.
All right.
Yeah. I think maybe the big truck people discount it, but I think it's pretty well-loved.
All right. You want to go for another one?
Yeah, underappreciated. I should say underappreciated but overpriced.
Okay.
I really like, and it's grown on me a lot since I've spent some more time in it, the new Nissan Z. I actually think it's a very good car. I think it's one of the best retro designs.
I'm a Z guy through and through, and I can't agree with that.
Well, I think it's first of all, the design is amazing. The design is great.
I agree with you.
240 in the front, 300 ZX in the back.
And 350 underneath.
Yeah, but it still is a good platform.
And I mean, the 350, not...
It's like a 370Z. Let's give it a little...
Which is a 350 underneath. Sure. That's why I said 350.
Look... I know it's an old platform, but concrete, what does that really mean? I mean, people always say that, oh, I discount it because it's an old platform. But how does that actually impact the driving experience and make it worse than you'd want it
to be?
Well,
the problem is that they didn't raise the bar in any area enough to compete with like the Supra or the cars that it directly competes with, except for styling. I agree. The styling is really, really good. But it's ride and handling dynamics and, you know... It does have a manual, so I'll give them that. You can get in a manual, which is great. But it doesn't like have that kind of feel where it feels special. It feels like when you're on the outside looking at it, you're like, this is a really cool car. And then when you get behind the wheel, you kind of feel like, yeah, I've been there, done that.
I don't know if I fully agree with that because...
And it also lives under the shadow of the GTR, you know.
Well, the GTR is dead now.
I know, but it was such an iconic thing. And then, you know, instead of actually making this iconic, they kind of just kind of rewarmed the 370 and then gave it a new skin. And I think that hurts it.
I think, listen, if you look at it as an exercise of innovation, you're right, it doesn't move the needle that much. But if you just look at it as, I bought this car and I want to enjoy it. It's got a really powerful engine, 400 horsepower, twin turbo, so it works great up here at elevation. It sounds pretty good. I don't think it handles nearly as well as a Supra. You're right about that. But it's a much more comfortable...
Supra's so much more tossable.
Yeah, but this is a much more comfortable daily driver.
It's a bigger GT. Yeah,
it's got a bigger, more comfortable interior. Sure, some of the switchgear is kind of old on it, but I think, like...
But I'd love it to be faster or more nimble or something besides just better looking. And that's my issue with it.
Yeah, but I always like the Zs.
And then I don't understand why they're so expensive.
Well, the price is too much.
So like the Nismo's like 70 almost.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
I just drove a Heritage version, which was the coolest. It had some cool retro wheels on it and graphics, and it was amazing. And it was like $63,000.
So I just don't think Nissan had the deep pockets to actually spend on, you know, putting something unique and interesting. So they updated it, which it needed. But, you know, like when the 300ZX twin turbo came out, right, that was a time when there was a lot of innovation. That was when the fourth gen Supra was out. And there were things like all-wheel steering, Super Hikus all-wheel steering. Remember that?
Sure.
Right? The Mitsubishi 4000VR, whatever the hell, that had active aero. Mm-hmm. So there was all this cool stuff that they put on these cars. And now this is just kind of, you know, it's like the Miata in some ways, right? They just made it a little bit better and didn't exactly do anything that's innovative or new or interesting.
Yeah.
That's just my take. I love Zs, so I wouldn't turn one down, but.
Everything you said is true. And like, if you look at it, like this is a disappointment because it didn't move the needle. I think that's a very, very valid complaint. And especially for the price. But I still think if I own that car, I would really enjoy it because it's fast, it sounds good, it looks cool, it does a lot of things absolutely right, and I think it's going to be fairly long-lasting. So I think that it's, I think that in my book, it's kind of a winner.
I'll give you I can't do this one. I'm doing trucks now, somehow I switched to the truck podcast.
It's okay, you can do one.
Can I do another truck?
Sure, it's
all right, fine. I'm sorry, Andre, I didn't mean to switch. I think the Raptor R is overhyped.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
That's a hot take, huh?
What's your why? Walk us through why you think that thing's overhyped.
Because the regular Raptor does everything just as well, and you don't have to pay, you know, a $40,000 premium for it. So, you know, you're paying a lot for that V8, and I think it's too much. And I think people want it because of the V8, and I think they want it because of the 700 horsepower. But the fact is, the TRX came along first and did it better in some ways. I like the supercharged V8 better than, you know, the turbocharged twin in the regular Raptor. And then, of course, because of the TRX, Ford had to take the GT500 engine, you know, modify it, put it in the Raptor R. But we owned one, and I just never really connected with it. I just felt it was thirsty, heavy, and in some ways, especially for a race truck, you want it to be lighter and not heavier.
But it feels...
I would say the exact opposite of the TRX, which is weird.
No. The TRX is slower.
I know, but for me, the TRX was more.
And the TRX also felt heavier. The TRX is heavier. It's quite a bit heavier.
It is heavier because the Ford's aluminum.
Yeah. I mean, you can see some of the drag races we've done. Like the Ford walks the TRX in a drag race. It's more nimble off-road because it's lighter. I think it handles better. I think it's better made. It's a lot of money for that Raptor R, but it, in my mind, it's totally worth it.
And maybe it's because it's, you know, it the Raptor originally was very innovative, and then the TRX leapfrogged it, and then Ford had to play catch up, and it took them a while to play catch up.
I would say they didn't play catch up. They surpassed. They did a better TRX.
Yeah, I like the TRX better.
But you haven't said why.
Well, because I just felt the TRX was much more of a sledgehammer, whereas the Raptor R is more of a scalpel.
But what does that mean?
I like the sledgehammer.
What does that mean?
I just like the sledgehammer means it's like the muscle car of trucks. I know the Ford is also the muscle car of trucks, but because it's lighter, it's a little bit more sophisticated, a little bit more tailored, but I like the brutal honesty and force of the, like, here's just a big old freaking supercharged V8, and we're not going to make any excuses. We're not going to, you know, make this thing so well tailored that, you know, it's made of aluminum, so it's still made of steel. And I just like the exhaust note combined with the induction note of the supercharger. There was something magic about the formula of the TRX that I think was missing in the Raptor.
So you like the TRX because it's bigger and heavier and slower?
Yeah.
Fair. Doesn't make any sense.
Well, I'm telling you, that's why I like it.
I think that the TRX has more supercharger wine, which is cool, and I think the exhaust note's better on the TRX. But as a product, I think that the Ford is a better product.
All right, well, sorry about hijacking this car podcast into our Talking Trucks podcast, but you have some more cars, Tommy.
Yes, there's a couple others, I think.
I have another underrated.
Staying in the Ford lineup, I think overrated.
Overrated.
And we can't say this until we drive it.
Yeah.
But I just really hate this philosophy. I'm really not that excited about the new Mustang GTD.
Don't know what to say to that. We haven't driven it. Don't know.
But the problem is, like, the thing about the Mustang is it has always been the affordable way.
It's built in Canada, so it's subject now to 25.
To the tariff. The Mustang has always been an affordable way for people to get in horsepower and just get the fun, open freedom of the road. And now we've got Farley, who's chasing Le Mans records with the Mustang, and he's going after the 911 and the GT3. And I would much rather see him do an even cheaper, more accessible Mustang with big power than go for a $350,000 supercar. I just don't understand why Ford has to be competing with Porsche at Le Mans. I don't think it's going to sell cars.
I feel you, Tommy, but I want that car. I got to tell you, I want the top dog Mustang. Because there's something, the last GT500, I took that on the track and I was terrified of it, over 700 horsepower. And it was a pussycat on this track. It was actually a lot of fun. So if they can get that kind of trackability into this thing, and they have, I'm guessing, then I really lust after this. I think it's America's take on a European sports car.
But we'll never, ever be able to afford one. And very few people will. Anytime you have to apply to buy a car.
Yeah, I agree.
Big problem with that.
Ford GT.
Especially if it has a Ford emblem on the front of it.
Yeah, Ford shouldn't be doing that.
Because Ford established themselves as the people's car. And when they go so far above what a typical person can buy, instead of offering more affordable performance to more people, I just can't get behind that. So I'm already saying this is an overrated vehicle, and I'm sure it's going to be amazing, and I'm sure that the laydown suspension in the rear and all the tech is going to be incredible, and I'm sure I'll never, ever get to drive one, especially now, but I just don't, it's not it for me.
Hey, Jim, I don't know if you listen to our podcast.
I guarantee you that he does not.
I suspect you don't, but I'll mortgage your house to get one, so.
Don't do that.
I will. So if you could put me in line, I'll mortgage the house. And
wasn't the original Mustang like $3,400? And now we're going to be mortgaging your house for $300,000.
I think it's badass. All right, I'll give you, I'm not sure if this is underrated or if it's a guilty pleasure. I'll let you decide. Guilty pleasure is something that nobody wants, but I love. Like, for instance, what's that Buick? The Buick
Cascada.
Cascada, yeah, that's my guilty pleasure. ELR, same thing.
Cadillac ELR. So yeah. You think it's underrated?
No. Those are my guilty pleasures. I'll give you, I'm not sure if it's a guilty pleasure or if it's underrated. So the car I think that is underrated is the new Discovery 5.
Yeah, it's fine.
See, underrated. There we have it.
It's.
So you would rather, I think it's as good in terms of its interior styling
yes.
as the Defender.
Yes.
In some ways it's actually better because I think it's more posh.
Uh-huh.
I think it's as good off-road as the Defender, but it is so undervalued compared to the Defender in terms of how many people want it and who's buying it, that I think it's one of those cars that is, you know, kind of the hidden gem in the Land Rover range.
Well, and there's a reason it's underrated.
I know the reason is because Discovery has a horrible reputation for reliability.
That's part of it. But why do you think this car is underrated?
I don't know. I don't know.
It's a bit ugly.
No, I like it, actually.
Nobody likes the way this looks.
I think I saw one going down the road the other day.
You have personally describe this exact car as a suppository.
Once upon a time, but opinions change, my man, and my opinion of this has changed. I really lust after one of these guys
I
now.
I mean, there's a reason that the LR4, 2016 LR4s, are worth more than a 2017 Discovery 5.
And it's great. They're like dropping in price like rocks. You can get these things now. Can get them for under $20,000.
I mean, so mechanically, they're fairly similar to a Defender.
Yes.
The platform, and they're very capable. And like this is the thing. Like I actually did consider buying one of these.
Yeah.
Because they are very good value.
They have air suspension.
Yeah, it's all the low range.
That launch color was like this bronze orangey color.
Look, you can get them with the rear locker, and like you can get all the great stuff with them. But they're just boring looking. That's the problem. Like, I, in every way, this car is better than my LR3.
Yeah.
And I really, really want to love it because there's such good value for what
you
get. So you'd
rather have the LR3.
But I just can't get behind the looks. Like,
I think it's got, like, city slicker looks with country underpinnings.
That's right. But I just can't get past the city slicker looks. I think it's too bulby and round.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's why they're cheap, right? That's LR4s are worse in every way to a Discovery 5. They're not as good off-road. They're not as comfortable. They got all, I mean, arguably not as good off-road, but they're not as comfortable. They're not as refined. The tech is worse. The engines are the same, basically, but they're worth more on the used market because they have that tough, square-jawed nature, and this doesn't.
All right, I'll give you another underrated car.
Yeah.
Blazer EV. I think the reason that's underrated is because it had a horrible launch, right? It launched and then it had a stop sale because the programming was all messed up and it left people stranded. But as a car, as an electric car, I think GM actually kind of nailed the design, and I think they nailed the range, and I think they nailed the width of that thing. That is a wide-ass car, and I like how wide it is.
I think that it's too expensive.
It is expensive.
So I don't agree with this, but I do think the Equinox EV,
all right,
very underrated. Equinox EV starts in like the mid-30s, and for the price point.
Yeah, but I like the size of this guy better. This is a square-jawed, big
The design bone. Is good, but it doesn't do a very good job of space packaging. Like, it's big on the outside, but it's pretty tight on the inside.
I think it's super wide, and it's very, I like the interior layout. It's got real buttons as opposed to fake buttons.
Yeah, but it doesn't have CarPlay.
Yeah, well, that's a whole other conversation, yeah.
I mean, I just, for the price point, I don't think it's there. For the lease values are incredible, for sure, and I think it's a good car. But I like the Equinox more. I think the Equinox EV is just a better value and is a better car. So I think that's where I would put my money. Equinox feels more like a Bolt. This feels like more like a Lyric, which is, of course, what the Lyric's based on. But, I don't know. I kind of agree with you.
Those air vents. How cool are those?
It's fine.
I mean, there's so much cool design going on there.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah.
Speaking of GM products, I think GM does in general, especially with their EV stuff, they have a lot of underrated products.
The Volt.
Volt.
Yeah, the first gen. Oh, my God.
Amazing,
that was so underrated.
Technology.
Yeah.
You can pick them up for like $7,000 to $10,000 now. And Volt batteries just don't fail.
The car doesn't fail.
Yeah, the cars are super reliable.
I think it was one of those cars that was too early with the problem of only having four seats, right? Because it had that tunnel where the battery lives.
Yeah.
And so when people looked at it, they felt it was not practical enough for their everyday needs. But if you want a good plug-in hybrid, then I would highly recommend the first-gen Volt. But the second-gen Volt, it turned into more of a Prius competitor.
I mean, they're better. In my opinion, they're better in every way, the second-gen Volts. But I like the look of the first-gen more. But yeah, amazing technology. And genuinely, if you look on the forums, the reliability has been excellent on Volts. Same thing with the second-gens. But I was going to say Bolt, the electric one, the B car.
Yeah, once again, underappreciated. Yeah.
Small, relatively affordable, very ugly, but they are incredibly good values now, and they are incredibly long lasting and just great cars.
They had one Achilles heel, and that was their charging rate.
The charging rate was too slow. They only did like 50 kilowatts on a fast charger. So
makes it hard to road trip.
Yeah, not a good road tripper. But if you just want an affordable car to cruise around in, especially the second gen like we had, we picked ours up for $23,000, tons of space, good technology, ours still had CarPlay, which was great, and it was just one of the best daily driving cars that I've ever experienced. It was so good. It was such a good little car.
We've done a lot of underrated. How about overrated?
Okay.
Give me an overrated car.
Do some more overrated stuff.
Yeah. Think hard.
I mean, I've driven a couple McLarens and I've never liked any of them.
Yeah, I agree. I think the McLaren's
very high strung, and this is another car.
That's a car where you got to be at like 9/10 before the thing comes to life.
Yeah, it's another car where you have to be so, you're right, you have to be so deep into the throttle before it feels fast. It's like the reverse of an Optima.
And they all look the same. I have a hard time like telling a 760 from like a 620.
Sure.
Right? I mean, Porsches all look the same, but at least they're pretty different in terms of their like jewelry, but McLarens all kind of look the same to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you have to be pushing them so hard for them to feel genuinely quick.
Yeah.
That they're like they're the anti-EVs, where EVs feel immediately quick even if they're not. These don't feel that quick unless you're so deep into the throttle.
And when you light it up, just hold on, man, because, oh my God, that thing does scare you.
It's a lot of performance. So that's a good one. I'm not super into McLarens. The other one that I think is consistently overrated is the GTR.
Tell me.
I've never really connected with the really.
But there's so much history there. It goes back. You know, we were just in Japan. Yeah. And it's like a Porsche 911, right? It's got so much provenance.
When the GTR launched in 2008, it was awesome. And by 2025, though, it still used this very antiquated transmission. Crazy turbo lag.
Once again, Nissan, not enough funds to update it, really.
It's like $200,000 by the time that
it was a supercar killer for, you know, $75,000. That's
right. When they were new.
That's not overrated. That's just taking supercar performance and making it affordable.
In 2007, 100%. That's a great value. This one, though, this 2021 we drove, I think was almost $250,000. That's not supercar killer for less money.
The Nismos got, toward the end, got very expensive.
Yeah, I think that
they just hung around too long.
It was just too long. Yeah, they needed to either kill it or update it, and by the end, it just didn't work for me. So that's a car I think is overrated. And like I said, early ones, especially if you can get a good one used, 100% definitely do it. But the later ones that aren't depreciating very quickly at all, just not very good. On the flip side, a car that I think is underrated is the second generation NSX. It was a really, really good car.
Yeah, I agree with you. I drove that a lot. And I think, once again, that setup now, like in the Rivalto and in the i8, where you've got two electric motors on each of the front wheels, is becoming kind of the thing, right? And I think they were just too early and probably just too expensive for what people were expecting. Because the NSX in its first generation was, once again, just like the GTR, right? It was a supercar made for the everyman. So you could take it to your local Honda dealership and you could have it serviced, Acura dealership. But it was affordable and it was lively. It was fun. I actually owned one. The problem with the new one was they just made it took too long and they made it too expensive.
100%.
It wasn't until the S came along where people started
to appreciate it. The Type S was amazing.
Yeah, it was too late.
It was too little too late. But I think that the driving dynamics of that car, kind of like the i8, far exceed some of the perception around the car, and it was just a really nice car to drive. Too expensive, but that car's going to go down, I think, and history is being pretty good.
I'll give you another overhype one. This is a hot take.
What do you got?
Miata.
What? Miata? Oh.
MX-5.
No, Miatas are great.
Oh, no, they're so overhyped. Everybody's
just,
like, oh,
small.
God. Look, when it first came out, it was beautiful. They took what was the most unreliable car in human history, which was a British Roadster, and they took all of the glory and beauty of that British Roadster and they Japanesed it. In other words, they made it reliable, they made it affordable. They made it fun to drive.
Start, stop.
But they haven't done anything with it. Like the NA to the ND, it's just the same thing. Like they haven't moved beyond that very first notion. They just kept changing the styling of it. But basically, the current Miata MX-5, if you're in the rest of the world, is the same as the first one. Whereas, at least with the 911, right, it changed and it grew. And, they gave it all-wheel drive. They gave it turbos. They took away turbos, right? They made it race. The Miata is the same car it's been ever since the first one came out. And that's why I think it's overhyped. And also, full disclosure, I don't ever fit in one. So I kind of feel like they've left me out of the whole Miata world.
Saying a Miata is overhyped because the formula didn't change is like saying the Bible isn't very good because they didn't rewrite it.
Oh, for gosh.
Like,
sake.
You have a formula that works. Why do you have to rewrite
it? Bible.
It's like, you know, Beethoven's Fifth. It would be better if we kept changing that. It wasn't quite right to begin with.
Then just
with.
Leave the first one. Just keep building the first one
forever.
Well,
they are. That's what this is.
Just don't even go for NB, NC, ND. Just go
for
the NA.
They're all the same. They're all perfect.
No, they're not.
They took the formula. They figured it out and they're like, should we fix it? And they're like, what is there to fix? It's perfect. Let's just keep doing it over and over. And then they did it over and over. They did it 4 times and they're all just as good. They work.
You could make an all-wheel drive one.
No,
shake the tree.
That's not a Miata.
Do something else with it. Just
every car.
And it's like It's like even that cliche, the answer is Miata. No, the answer is not Miata, especially when you're 6'2". The answer is not Miata.
Listen, maybe. Hey,
I sold mine, the one we bought as a company. You bought it from the company.
Yes.
Do you still have it?
No.
Why?
Because I didn't like it that much.
There you go.
But that's because I didn't actually like it that much, but I understand why people do.
I think that was a mic drop moment, Tommy.
Yes. It is another car. I like bad cars, and it was too good. But the point is, I think that we need to have a car that just doesn't change. Every car now is turbocharged and all-wheel drive. Just let the Mazda Miata be the rear-wheel drive manual for the people that want an enthusiast car that don't want to chase 0 to 60 numbers.
All right, underappreciated. Aztec.
Very underappreciated.
You agree with me.
Yes, the Pontiac Aztec. We owned one.
Usually underappreciated for everything that came with it. How? I mean, if you look at, seriously, I know people think I'm joking, but I'm not. Look at the styling of the Aztec. Look at the shape of the Aztec. Look at the way that it's configured to hold people, and that was a template for every freaking crossover that they sell today.
Well, yeah, even the way the headlights are stacked is every car.
Yeah, exactly. Look at the headlights, the weird ass headlights that now every car has, where the headlights are underneath the turn signals, right?
The sloping rear end.
They're Charlotte, yeah.
The sloping rear end is exactly the same as every modern day crossover. No, these are excellent cars. They utilize space really well. It's got VersaTrak all wheel drive, which had a twin disc. Twin clutch rear end like a Bronco Sport, which is pretty neat. So they really are very, very good cars. Quality aside, I think
quality's crap.
Yeah, the quality is very bad. It's very 2001 Pontiac. But
look at that, those little seat cutouts in the tailgate.
Yeah, it was just super smart. Some great design, some great engineering in there, and it had
that center console you could lift out, and it was a cooler. It had the tent you could sleep in. I mean, it just was ahead of its time. Look at that. Now you're showing the air suspension. Look at that. Massive thumper in the back there. These are all things that, by the way, people are wondering, that is Charlotte. She used to work for us.
Mm-hmm.
And there you are giving her a sleeping bag and showing off the tent. That tent was almost more expensive than the car, actually.
He has an air compressor in the back.
Yeah.
No, Aztecs are genuinely very good cars if they were
ahead
just a little better
ahead
made.
Ahead of their time.
Yeah, very ahead of their time.
Yeah.
So I think that's a very underrated car. I think that's very true. Going back to overrated, this is one that everyone's going to hate me for, but I drove James's Supra. He's probably listening to this. Sorry, James.
Well, it's automatic, so it doesn't really count. So James has the Holy Grail of Supras, the fourth gen.
Yes, and it was a dream to drive, so thank you, James, for letting me drive it. The problem is I had built that car up in my head as being such an amazing, unbelievable experience with that 2JZ engine. And stock, it's smooth and refined, but it's not the powerhouse that the world has promised me it would be.
Left.
And I'm sure if James super, you know, did a bigger single turbo and went through the usual super thing, it would be amazing. But a stock configuration, I'm so glad he kept his stock because there's so few of them out there.
Well, he put that giant coffee can exhaust on it.
He put the exhaust on it. Yeah. And I'm glad that he has one to show the world what they're like.
The problem with that one is here we drag race it against the GR.
By the way, Corolla. Same exact performance. GR Corolla to fourth gen Supra, both automatics. They were neck and neck, like to the quarter of a second. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, the problem is just when that GR, actually the Super comes on boil, it shifts.
Yeah, so maybe the manual is a better experience. Yeah. That's a good point. But I was a little bit disappointed.
Look how it's dwarfed by that GR Corolla.
I mean, yeah, look at it. Huge.
And that's a small car in today's world.
Shockingly huge.
Yeah.
And now I drove a car I wanted to get your impression on, underrated or overrated, Golf R. Adequately rated, maybe.
So the Golf R, it depends on what generation.
Current one.
I haven't driven the current one.
Yeah,
is it 7.5?
Yeah, we drove it together, the Mark 8.
I thought there was a Mark 8.5.
Yes, so that's the one I just drove in Sweden.
Yeah.
But virtually the same.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah,
I thought they like fixed some of the stupid switches, right, where it was all that half the crap. Is it still there?
No, they did fix some of the stuff. You're right. But I'm saying as a car, underrated or overrated? Or adequately rated. I think it's okay.
So here's the problem with the Golf R. I love the Golf R, but it's trying to do two things at once. It's trying to be a hot hatch, and it's trying to be a sophisticated hot hatch. And the issue is hot hatches appeal to people your age, and sophisticated cars appeal to people my age, and this is kind of two things in one that don't really belong. It's like oil and vinegar in some ways. If you're going to do a hot hatch, I know I just was whining and moaning about the fact that the GR Corolla is too cheap on the inside. This fixes all that.
It's also 50 grand, though.
But then it becomes too expensive. That's exactly the issue.
Yeah.
So I think...
You're going adequately rated?
I would say, you know, if you just want the driving experience and you don't need an all-wheel drive, go with the GTI. You'll save tons, and you don't necessarily need, you know, all that added expense for the top dog in Volkswagen's lineup.
I agree. And then the last car, which we've owned, which I will die on this hill, is underrated. I know you hated it, but it was, for the money, the Jeep Liberty is an excellent off-road machine.
Jeep Liberty.
I'm not kidding.
That was like one of the succession of Jeeps that they basically created to take the shine and the spotlight off the Wrangler and sell it at a premium price for not a lot of car.
No, it was a lot of car,
yeah,
though. So this car...
Premium for what you got.
There's nothing premium about a Liberty.
Right.
This car had the impossible task.
Wrangler Lite.
It had the impossible task of replacing the XJ Cherokee, which is like you trying to write a new Bible. You're just not going to do better. But actually, what they accomplished was a vehicle that's more refined on the road, that still has a solid rear axle off-road, that still has good ground clearance. I mean, the off-road ability of the Liberty is there. It's there. I just read...
It's kind of like, for me, it was kind of like that old lovable dog.
David Tracy just did an interview with one of the engineers behind this Jeep.
Yeah.
Do you know, they tested this thing on the Rubicon Trail. So, like, they proved that it was that capable.
Did they stack a lot of rocks?
I don't know. They didn't go into that. But...
I bet you stacked a lot of rocks.
Listen, that may be true, but anything getting down the Rubicon Trail is pretty amazing. And for $3,000, I know that 3.7 is kind of a dog, and the interior is made out of Happy Meal bits, but it is such a good value. I really like Liberties. I think that they're excellent, excellent, affordable.
The problem
with
Liberty is that they've worked their way down the ownership ladder, right? So the car starts with a new owner who's proud of it, who loves it, who watches it, yada yada, and then it gets 5 years old and 50,000 miles, and it gets handed to the, like, Andre just bought that. That's kind of the second rung. Andre just bought that Subaru
Outback
from his aunt, I think. Anyway, and then it goes down the second rung, who's the next person, but they no longer have the same, like, connection to it. It's more of just transportation. And by the time you get to most Liberty, they're like beyond high schoolers, right? You know what I mean? Who just take it and just abuse it and just run it and put too many miles and then lots of deferred maintenance. So finding one that is actually in good condition is almost, if not impossible.
If your Jeep Liberty will make it to 50,000 miles.
It'll make it to 250.
It'll make it to 300. Yeah. Liberties are very strange where I see, and we're going to get comments on this video, and it's split 50-50. Half the people say, I bought one new, and it was the biggest pile of garbage in humanity. It left me stranded every 2 weeks and needed $38,000 in repair. That's one half of the people. The other half of the people are the Liberty people that said, I owned one till 800 million miles, and it never died. So it's split 50-50. But as a cheap go-anywhere off-road vehicle, here's ours. I think we paid like $3,000 for that thing. Put some tires on it, put a A-frame thing on it that David made. It was unreal what that thing could do. I absolutely fell in love with that Jeep.
Cole, how much time we got? How long have we gone? We're at an hour? All right, I'll give you one last one. And by the way, would you buy the diesel version of this?
No, God.
Okay.
They're cool.
Yeah.
The CRD with the...
Look at all that rust. Oh, my God. That's Colorado.
What do you mean,
look
rust?
Look at that leaky diff. It's, I mean, look at all the oil pouring out of the differential.
It's fine. Just put some more in there.
I'll give you the ultimate underappreciated off-roader. We owned it.
What?
The Touareg.
Sure.
That was the ultimate. Now it's too old. All of them are used up. But when we bought ours, the Touareg was designed and built at the top of Volkswagen's game.
Yes.
Right? When Piëch ran the company, and that car had everything that a Wrangler had. Plus, it was able to go 150 miles an hour on the Autobahn, which is freaking amazing.
I do like Touaregs. They're very cool. And the locking rear diff and the air suspension and all of it was amazing.
You can get three lockers, I think, in Europe. There was a front locker,
That's like the biggest. No one's actually seen one, though.
Okay.
So apparently,
look at it. There it's going up. Baby lions back down. All you need to do is throw some ATs on that thing. And yeah, they're amazing. Unstoppable.
They're really, really good. Yeah. But they're also very expensive to maintain.
Yes.
That's the problem with them. Is that no doubt they're underrated. You're right. But Liberties, you can fix them with a bit of string.
The overrated one is the 10-cylinder diesel.
No, yeah. That's not overrated. That's overrated. Like the ultimate underrated one. So look, you can fix a Liberty with a piece of string and some bubble gum. This, you need the special German tool that's only available in Wolfsburg, and there's only the one guy that has it, and then like they're very expensive to keep on the road, which is why I still think the Liberty.
I preface that by saying it's too late now; they're all used up. You're
even
not going to find one with 50,000 miles.
Even new, these things were a mess. They just weren't.
I don't think so.
They were a mess.
Ours had that 4.2-liter Audi V8.
Yeah.
Which wasn't horrible.
What happens if you need a timing chain on that engine?
Well, don't need a timing chain.
There you go.
All right. Well, I think we've blown through another hour discussing and bickering and arguing about under and overappreciated cars. Let us know in the comments below what you have had experience with. Whether it was either over or underappreciated, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah.
And where should they go, Tommy, if they want to see more TFL videos?
Head over to alttfl.com where we got everything in one spot. And you can learn about what we've been talking about.
Yeah, and check out the third episode of Carish, which is coming up this week.
Yes.
Where Tommy and Case and the girls talk about all things not Carish.
That's right.
Well, Mary's the ish part. You're the car part.
Car unrelated, yes.
Unrelated.
We'll see you guys next time.
Yeah, ciao.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
My education would cost $42,000, but with VA benefits, I'm paying zero. VA covers my tuition, supplies, and housing, and it can cover yours too. Get what you earn. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.